That's your four. Seminar, Oweri, Nigeria. The title, Knowing My Values. Knowing My Values. Do we know our values? Do we really know what our values are? Do we know who we are? And sometimes we learn slowly, sometimes we learn quickly, but knowing our values is a very precious thing to do. All of my life I have been involved in sharing with people and going around telling stories with people of things that were going on. And as I was going around doing these things, I was in high school, I was in college, and so forth. And every place I'd go and tell stories of what I was interested in, like forestry or unity or whatever teachings I had, I would have so many things to say. I would say so many things, get so many things across. And I would talk so rapidly that people didn't understand half of what I said, and the other half, they didn't get it all. So I was talking blind to no one. And I didn't realize this because I had so much to say. My brother would always say, you have diarrhea of the mouth, you know. You're just always spouting off and talking. Well, that's fine. And then the day came when I went to speak in Europe, to speak in foreign countries. And as I spoke in these foreign countries, I found one of the greatest lessons in my life. And that was the lesson of realizing that I only had half the time in which to speak. Because as I spoke to the people in Europe, in Russia, in Germany, in France, in Switzerland, in Italy, and Egypt, and all these people had different languages. And so my ability or my opportunity to speak was cut right in half or less. Because my interpreter had to figure out what I was saying and interpret it and say it and then give me time to say some more. And this went on for a while, and I got so excited with my talking, I forgot to let the interpreter interpret. And I went on and on and on, and the interpreter would sit there and say, okay, it's your show. Do what you want to do. They're not getting your message because they're not understanding the words, because I'm not interpreting it for them. And I thought, you know, old smarty here, I thought that was kind of cute. I thought that was kind of cute, me talking faster than my interpreter could interpret. And I had a sort of an insight, and the insight said to me, there's nothing funny about that. Is what you have to say important to say? If what you have to say is important to say, it is important that your audience understand what you say. So, now, I had to say in half the time to my foreign lecturers what I wanted to say in full time to my English-speaking lectures. And in my English-speaking lectures, I would just take them off like a fireball and just give them everything I had and all the information I had. And then when I spoke to foreign countries, I had to cut it in half, and I had to select what it was that I really wanted to say. What did I really want to say? What did I really want to say? What did I really want to say? And boom, boom, boom. My interpreter didn't help me because they were busy interpreting. But I had to listen within. And then the thought came to me. I am forced to cut in half everything that I say and let the interpreter say it. Now, that means that only half of what I say is getting across. Now, only half of what I say is really important, therefore. I have to choose, out of the few moments that I have to be heard, what I'm going to say. So, I began at that time taking out all the extraneous words. I began at that time stopping to speak in cutesy language and inverted language and convoluted language where I made things all sound so poetic and stuff like that. And I began getting down to earth. And as I got down to earth, I began speaking articulately. I began to articulate the words that I used so that everyone could understand what I said. I forgot this cutesy stuff. I forgot this stuff of being, oh, aren't I smart? Look at how fast I can go. And my poor translator cannot go that fast. Well, he probably could go that fast, but then he would sound worse than me. I had one translator, very dear, long-time translator and friend. His name was Eddie Meyer. And I called him my machine gun, because I would say things, and he would say it instantly as I was saying them, as fast as I was saying them. And then when I listened back on the tapes of me talking and him talking, I thought, my goodness sakes, who's going to understand any of what I'm saying? Is what I'm saying so important that I have to tell the whole story, or that I can condense it and tell it articulately and carefully? And so with Eddie, I began to articulate very carefully and very slowly. And Eddie had to slow down. Eddie had to become more cognizant of what I was doing. And it was a blessing to Eddie, because as it was, he became the director of the Newport University throughout Europe and Africa. And he's been doing that very nicely, which he wouldn't have done if he had gone rapid fire as he had been doing. Because in rapid fire, though he knew everything, no one could understand him because he went so fast. And because of me speaking so fast, no one could really understand what I was saying. So, I figured what I ought to do is to keep it simple. Keep it very simple. Keep it very reduced down, so that whatever it is that I'm saying is understood absolutely. Now, a lot of people, they answer me in long, drawn-out sense. I say, well, how are you today? Oh, I'm just so fine. I had a nice time. Hey, how are you today? I'm fine. Thank you. That's all I want to know. I don't want to know anything else. You told me everything. Now I think you're wonderful. I think you're fantastic. I think you're glorious. I think that you're great, 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 great. You don't have to tell me anymore. Well, you see, I didn't say that. That would have driven him up the wall. But it drives me up the wall as I listen to people say more words than they need to say what they want to say. If each of us learns how to articulate and say very clearly what we have in our mind, then the people who are listening will understand what we're saying. If you're a teacher and you get off on the magic of words and things like that, your student is going to be sitting there saying, okay, I wonder where my teacher is going. What are we supposed to learn from this? And they sit there and they wait and they wait and they wait, and nothing comes. Because the teacher is off on la-la land, having a grand time expressing it herself or himself so articulately, so completely, that they're not getting the information to the student. Now, you each are teachers. You each are good teachers. You are teaching from your example of who you are and what you are. Every time you pick up your fork at the table, every time you pick your nose, every time you put on clothing, every time you speak to anyone, you're teaching. People are looking at you and at what you're teaching, and they're thinking to themselves, oh, is that what it is? Is that who it is? Is that who's going on here? And what's going on? They have a new understanding of just what you're doing. And that new understanding is articulate and wonderful. Now, I have three ladies at campus who are speaking from the point of view of their dialectic German background. And at first they thought it was so cute that their dialect was so nice, so cute, so cute. And then they became American citizens, and they said, well, I don't have a dialect anymore. And we go into restaurants, and people turn to them and say, oh, are you from Germany? You know, where are you from? You're from a foreign land. Because the dialect stood out so clearly on what they were doing. Now, did they get across the message that they wanted to get across? Did they get across the message that they wanted to articulately speak in English so they could be understood by anybody? And if you don't, then you have to stop and think about yourself. Now, this is me. I'm talking about me. Because I get so fired up with all the ideas that I have and the values that I'm sharing and the things that I think are important. And I sometimes forget to speak slowly, articulately, and significantly, so everyone who listens will understand what I'm saying. Now, I've become quite good at this over the years. I have a long way to go to become the best. but I'm doing what I believe is right, and I'm doing it gently and slowly. And as I do it, and I see other people not doing it, I feel like I should tell them, slow down, you should speak articulately, you should do it. If I am aware that others are speaking too quickly and not articulately, that's enough. That's my lesson. That's my lesson to me, to speak slowly and articulately. That's my lesson to me. Now, how many of you know anything about the Catholic Church? Hail Mary, Mother of God, that's the rosary. And they say the rosary for year after year after year after year after year, and they say it so quickly. If you ask them what it means, they say, well, just a minute, let me think about it. Because they're saying it so quickly, and they're saying it so rotely, they're not saying it from their heart. Now, you say, well, we have the Lord's Prayer, our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy name. And then that gets so rote too, and so quick, that we forget what it really means. People try to give a table blessing, and they say, oh, Heavenly Father, bless this food as we eat it, and may it nourish our bodies and strengthen us if we carry on thy word. Oh, bull roar, you know. What we say is, I bless this food. How do I say it?
Say, this food is heavenly for my body and filled with love.
So I don't get in the act at all. I just say, this food is healthy for my body and filled with love. This food is healthy for my body and filled with love. There's no trying to get some outside deity to bless the food or to make it worthy of my body or make my body worthy of the food. It's just a matter of recognizing that it is so. And so every morsel of food that I eat, I say this food is healthy for my body and filled with love. And sometimes I've got more than I need, so I stop. Because I can stop. If you drink water and somebody brings you a gallon of water and you drink one glass and you say, well, aren't you going to drink the rest of the gallon? No, not right now. I had what I would like. Can you say that? Are you allowed to say that? Are you allowed to speak from your heart what it is that's going on in you? Are you allowed to say, no, one glass is enough, thank you. You know, Ellen, my associate, we go into restaurants, and she comes from a very hoi-polloi family, very rich and stuff like that, and so she's used to saying, just a half a cup, please, just a half a cup of coffee, just a half a cup of tea. What a mess. Can you imagine the waiter coming over and dumping it in there and trying to get a half a cup in there? You know what happens most of the time? Do any of you know? It splashes over. It gets over super filled. It goes into her saucer. She picks up her saucer and she's dripping tea down on her blouse. Whereas if she would just not say anything, yes, I'd like some more tea. Waiter, you know how to pour the tea. You've been in the business for a long time. I don't have to tell you what to do. And if I leave a little tea in my cup, you don't think a thing about it. I'm paying for it. You don't care. You see, now, we have to train ourselves. We have to train ourselves to think that we're worthy of saying no or saying yes, or drinking what we want, or eating what we want, and not eating what we don't want. So, this food is healthy for my body and filled with love, and we don't have to clean our plate. We've been taught to clean our plate. Always clean your plate. If you take it, eat it. Well, maybe I had too big eyes, you know, and I couldn't take all that I did. Have you ever been in a buffet? A buffet is a restaurant where you can take all you want. Eat all you want. It's one price. And when you eat all you want, what happens? My goodness, you always take more than you want. And you think, well, wouldn't it be great to have things at this time in this way? Wouldn't it be great to do things in this manner? And would it? Really? It got clicked on the inside. You probably want to go around and give them a hand. You want to go around and give them a hand on the inside? You don't want to go around and give them a hand on the inside. And you don't want to go around and give them a hand on the inside either. Nobody wants to give them a hand on the inside. How about that? They're trying to get through that door, and the latch is closed on the inside, and they haven't unlatched it. No. Peter? Are you listening to me?
Yes.
Are you listening to me with all your heart?
Yes.
Then how could you have ever noticed that the doorknob was trying to be turned? if you're listening with all your heart, how can you know that the doorknob needs returned? I go flying with my son in this airplane, and as we fly along, we do different things. He gives me the control, and I take the control and fly. And as I'm flying, everything's going along just beautifully. And then my son says, hey, let's go over there now. And I point toward this here mountain. Do this. And so I point toward it and do that. And as I do that, then the plane goes that direction. And everything is in divine order. But as everything is in divine order, what am I doing? What am I doing? I'm just flowing with it. Just flowing with everything and having everything be beautiful and fantastic. Think about it. Are you an articulate speaker? Are you a person who knows your values? What is your value? When I'm flying with my son, and he said, Dad, go to that mountain, or go to this valley, or do this, and I go there. Do I ask him, why do you want me to go there? Why should I go there? I really don't feel like going to that mountain. I don't feel like going to that valley. I just go, because I'm part of the game. I'm part of the flow. So, you have chosen a very responsible role in life, and you've chosen the role of being a teacher. And the first person you're teaching is yourself. The first person you're teaching is yourself to be aware of who and what you are. Are you able to be aware of who and what you are? Are you able to be aware that you are wonderful, and that your values are good, and that your direction and goal for yourself in life is good? Too often we don't do that. Too often you do like I do, and you have so much to say, you just verbal away, and you don't really pay attention that people don't understand you as you're talking. I know we've had that here a couple times. As I talk to different ones of you, you talk to me, and you're sitting 2 inches away from me, and I don't hear a word you're saying. I read your lips, and I get a little bit of an idea, but you're talking in dialect. And so, that's not always too easy either. But, is what you have to say important? Is what you have to share important? If what is important to you in what you have to say and what you have to do, then what do you want to do? You want to speak articulately. You want to share articulately. Now, Mabel was asking a question about the computer, and Endless was giving her some answers. And Mabel says, oh, this is the way I do it, this is the way I do it, this is the way we do it, this is how it's done, this is what we, how I handle it. And Endless says, okay. And then Mabel finally said, oh, would you like to tell me how you do it? You know. And so then Endless began telling her how he did it. And she says, oh, that didn't work for me. And so they discussed it back and forth. Well, now, when you are a teacher and you're so sure that you're right, you can be sure that you're wrong. Because there are so many ways that any one thing can be done. And when we open ourselves to the infinite variety of the possibilities, we are having a great time. We are having a great experience. Now, each one of you has come to this seminar to participate in it and learn from it and experience the various topics that we bring up. Now, I am always going to be giving things on time. I'm starting at 9 o'clock or 2 o'clock like we're supposed to, because I want to be honorable to you. I would be dishonorable to any of you if I didn't get here on time and start the class on time. Even if I have a good excuse, I can't do that. Now, what's going on? Why am I dishonorable if I do not show when I say I'm going to show? Well, because I don't like myself if I do that. I don't like myself. Because if I give my word is my bond, and my word is what guides me through everything in my life. Can you imagine Mabel going into her classroom at school and looking at the chairs and saying, where are all the students? And then one kid says, well, they're on the playground yet. And she says, well, why aren't they in here in their seats ready for the lesson? And the student says, because you're always late, so they decided they'd be late too. And Mabel says, I'm late? Yeah. Do you realize that clock ticks and then A half a minute later, you walk in the door. A half a minute later, I never thought of that. And she says, I really come in a half a minute late to my class? And they say, yes, you do. Well, why don't you, all you kids stay outside then if you're protesting my coming in a half a minute late? Because we're here to learn regardless of whether you are present or not. We are here to learn what the program has to give us. And Mabel said, wow, do I have some beautiful students here. So what does Mabel do? She says, all right, children, since you're here, I'm going to give you the lesson. When the students come in, they can pick it up wherever they do, and just because they miss the beginning of it, just because they miss the most important thing, which is the foundation of the lesson, that's okay, that's their business. We're just talking to bat it off the wall anyhow. It's not really important. And so, you see, Mabel learned a lesson there. Mabel learned a lesson that a half a minute means a lot to students who are learning to be very punctual, learning to be very diligent, and all of those miserable students who stayed outside and played because she was a half minute late, they were on top of it. They knew what was going on. And then when they did finally come in, Mabel did not treat them like they were not there. She just went on with the lesson, and she asked them questions that they might have heard if they had been in the class when they were supposed to be. And some of them knew the answers. Most of them didn't, but some of them knew the answers. And she said, you're very alert. You're very much on it. You see, if we love ourselves, we are always punctual. We are always on time. We are always doing things that are right to do. One of the things that I was told when I came to Nigeria was that they are not punctual. That if we come to a meeting 3 hours late, the people will still be waiting. And they were. Now, do you think that that made me happy? To keep people waiting for 3 hours? It took time to get from various places. We just didn't judge how much time it would take. Now, who is it that you're teaching? Who is it that you're teaching? Are you teaching yourself to be punctual? Are you teaching yourself to be honorable? Are you teaching yourself to be your original purity and integrity? Now, what is your original purity and integrity? Your original purity and integrity is your ideal self. You don't know what the ideal self is. I don't know what the ideal self is, but I know it's good. But I know that the ideal self, my original purity and integrity, is beautiful and whole and perfect. Now, anytime I have a sore throat or a cold or headache or illness of any kind, I am not true to myself. Can you, when you go to bed at night and you know you're working on something that's important in your life, some, well, for instance, a cold, can you lay there or sit there and say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect? All 8 hours of your normal sleep time. Can you do that? Even if you fall asleep, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. You know what's going to happen? Number one, the cold that's in you, the irritation that's in you, has to take a back seat. It has to recede. It has to go away. But you see, it doesn't go away immediately because you still are holding on to it because you're thinking about the cold. When you say I'm whole and perfect, you're thinking about the cold. You're thinking about it being there with you. And it's wonderful, because that's the principle. Now, how do you put a new principle into motion? How do you put, not a new principle, but a new cause into motion? You put a new cause in motion by saying, all is in divine order. Now, have you ever thought that your body is in divine order? Have you ever thought that your mind is in divine order, that you are in divine order? Have you ever thought that? Have you ever thought your wife or husband are in divine order? That they are just the most wonderful beings on earth? Oh, they have their little hang-ups, their little problems that give you a little concern now and then, but they're whole and perfect. Have you ever thought that? Now, Sam is here. He is returning from an experience, and he's doing beautifully. He's expressing his wholeness and perfection in beautiful ways. But every time Sam feels a need, he sends that vibration over to Seville, and Seville jumps to his need. Now, what is Seville doing? If the bill were to say, I jump to Sam's delight, how beautiful that would be. I jump to Sam's delight. I jump to Sam's delight. He doesn't need me. He doesn't want me. He doesn't own me or possess me. He just lets me work with him on things that are important to him, and I jump to his delight. And if you jump to his delight, then you are not looking at an infirmity, you're not looking at something that's less than perfect, you are looking at his ideal spirit, mind, and body. You are looking at his original purity and integrity. Now, Sam looks at his wife as her original purity and integrity because he sees his own. And Sibyl looks at Sam and sees her original purity and integrity in him. Now, that's pretty powerful. That's pretty powerful. But if ever Sam feels sorry for himself, all of the stuff is washed away. If ever Sibyl feels sorry for herself, that she has to be a blessing to somebody else, then it all washes away. If everything we do in life is a delight, we do it as a delight. We do it because it's fun. We do it because it's charming. We do it because it's wonderful. I was in Switzerland back in 75 or 8 or something like that, and this was the time that the gay people were coming out of their closets, and there was a beautiful shop there, and Ellen was buying a beautiful leather jacket. And I said, hey, that's a cool looking leather jacket. I said, I see they have some beautiful white leather pants there. I'd like to buy a pair of white leather pants. Well, Ellen said, no, no, you can't have white leather pants because that puts a label on you. That puts a label on you that you're gay and things like that. I said, oh, I see. In other words, if I smile at other people, that means I'm gay because the gay people smile at other people. Because I'm a human being, that means I'm gay because other people who are gay are human beings. You know, we want to label these things in life, and we take away all the joys of it. We take away all the enthusiasm of it and all the wonder of it. I had actually no intention of getting the white pair of trousers because I knew what they symbolized to Ellen. But the thing is, I shook her boat. I said it to her to see just how far she'd go. I said, Ellen was buying, you know. She's a rich lady. And so I said, okay, buy that for me. She said, no, no, I'll buy you a sweater, but not those white pants. And I said, well, I want those white pants. And she says, no, no, I'll buy you a sweater, but not the white pants. I said, I want the white pants. And so we went to the lady, and she didn't have my size in the white pants. And she didn't have my size in the sweater. So I got neither. But, you see, we play these games. We play these games. And because we play the games, we shut everything off. We close off everything. And this is not what we want to do. We want to always be on top of everything, sharing everything, living harmoniously and articulately. Now, each one of you can express yourself articulately. And when you do, what happens? The world understands what you're saying. And like I tell you, I say, how are you? Are you happy? Oh, I'm so happy. Everything's going to... No, no. Are you happy? Yes. Are you sad? No. Do I understand you? Definitely. Yes. If you start giving me a whole sentence, do I understand you? Oh, yeah. You're trying to cover up something. You're really not happy. You really got some hang-ups. You really got some problems. But I'm not going to be part of that. I'm not going to be part. Yes, no, but not part of the discussion. Because this is not where we want to go. We each are creators of our world. We each are creators of the values that we live. Now, what sort of values do you have? Our topic today is very much centered on that. We're saying here, whatever we're saying here, value and love determine success in our life. Is that right? Value and love determine success in our life. Well, that's beginning tomorrow. Today, it is knowing my values. Okay? Knowing my values. Do you know your values? Do you know your values? Are you going to say yes, no, or are you going to give a long discussion on what you're talking about? All of the time, when we are unsure of ourselves, we need to give a long discussion. We need to go on and on and on. We're trying to defend ourselves and defend what we believe. Now, a number of you have had the opportunity to come and talk with me and share with me. And each one of you who came to share with me had virtually the same circumstance. Your world was not unfolding quite the way you wanted it to. You were having some difficulties that were not unfolding the way you liked it. And so you felt that telling me about what was not unfolding the way you liked it was going to be important. You thought that telling me your problems was going to solve your problems for you. Well, that's not true. If you have a problem, what is it that I want to know from you? Do any of you know? What do I want to know from you?
Solution.
I want to know what solution you have in mind. I want to know what solution you have, because that's what we're going to work on. We're not going to work on the problem, because who cares about the problem? The problem is out there in the background. We have done it. It's miserable. It's bothering us. Let it go. But now we're going to work on the solution. So, people are treating you badly at work. And they're telling you that you're not a good worker and that they don't really like to be around you and you've got problems. And so you come and you tell me, they were not treated like me, we're at work, they're treating me badly. And I say, good, good. Are they doing a good job of it? What do you mean? That's not nice to say that. Yes, are they doing a good job? Well, they're sure getting after me. Well, now, think about it. What have you told them is your desire in your life? You have told them your problem is your desire in your life. You've told them that the thing that you say you don't want is what you really do want. Well, how did I say that? You say that, I say that, when we tell people the problem. Now, I need some money to get on the bus to go to the town to go to the dentist's office. Now, where am I going to get the money to go on the bus to go to the dentist's office? There's no money in the house. There's no way of getting any money. I was at Valley Center in San Diego, a very classy shopping center, because that's where Apple, iMac, and so forth are located. And I went to Ellen dropped me off there, and I was supposed to take the streetcar to come back to where she was. So I went to the streetcar, and I tried to put a coin in the meter, and it wouldn't take it. And I said to a fellow sitting there in his wheelchair, I said, it won't take my coin. He said, where are you going? I told him. He said, oh, I got an extra ticket. You want it? I said, well, thank you. I said, you want the coin? No, 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 no. And so I went to where I was going. And it was just perfect, free. And then that happened another time. This time I was even further away. And I tried to put a coin in, and it wouldn't take the coin. So I held the coin in my hand because I wanted the conductor to know when he came that I really did intend to pay for it. And he came up to me and he looked at the coin. First, he came up to me and he talked to someone next to me. And they were not intending to pay. They were trying to get a free ride. And he says, off at the next stop. And so he put them up. And then he came to me. And I said, I tried to put the money in, but it wouldn't take it. He says, forget it. Keep it. Sit down. For me, he just, because I was attempting to be honest, I was attempting to follow the rules, he said, no problem, no problem. Now, what if I didn't have any money and I went to the station hoping someone would give me something? Do you think I'd get it? No. You see, when we tell the law how to go about giving us anything, what happens? We limit the law. We limit the law to our understanding. Could I have ever dreamed two times in a row that I was going to get a free trip on the transit? It wasn't terribly expensive, but it was a free trip twice. You see, when you know what you want to do, it always works. The other time I came into here in Abuja, and I wanted to buy some water and some gum to chew. And the girl at the counter wouldn't take my euro. She wouldn't take anything. She just couldn't take anything. And then finally I had three $1 bills and she took that gave me some water and the gum, and I said, well, thank you very much. And then I went back to my chair, and I sat down, and I opened my wallet, and here there were 500s and 500s of your money that I could have used, but it didn't shine up. It didn't come up. Now, it's there. It was always there. It was always ready for me to use it and enjoy it, but I didn't use it. I don't know, would 500 lire, whatever it is, buy some water? Would it buy some gum? Well, I had maybe 4 or 5 of them, they would have taken it. So, you see, when we have mentally have not the problem in our mind, we merely have the solution. Somehow the solution always works out. I said to her, too, will you take a credit card? And she said, well, let's see it. She said, oh, not that, that's the United States. She wouldn't take that credit card. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I'm glad I don't really need to do it. But isn't it interesting? We, every time we make a problem for ourselves, the problem has a tough time coming to a solution. But when we have a solution for ourselves, it always works out in a divine pattern for our original purity and our integrity. It's so important for us to do that because it's so easy not to. Each one of us, we live our life as though we are a prima donna, as though we are superior to other people, as though we are better than other people and more talented, more capable than other people. And because we do that, we cut off the opportunity to have the relationship with other people because they think that they're not good enough for us because we're so superior. And here it is. Maybe it's Princess Di. And she wants to be a friend of yours. And you act so superior, she doesn't know how to do that because she's such a gentle being. Yeah. We're like that. We work on problems and we get no solutions. We work on solutions and we have no problems. It's so simple, so beautiful, and so wonderful. But I would like to reemphasize that when I was a child, I had so much to say. I was talk, 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 talk. And I talked so fast and so much that people stopped listening to me. I didn't know that. They just did. But then, as I went on, little by little, I learned how to modulate my talking. I learned how to speak and have something to say and believe in myself. And as I believed in myself, everything worked out in perfect divine order. It always does for all of us. Now, each one of you are here, and each one of you have the privilege of being on the healing committee here, of seeing everybody in this house whole and perfect. Each one of us here have the opportunity to see everything done. See everything done. See everything done. At the expense of repeating myself, I'm going to tell this story. Because I like it. It's a story about Irene. Remember that? Okay. Irene was a lady who was in the hospital dying of cancer. And she was all shriveled up, just dying of cancer. And her daughter asked me to go see her. And I went to see her, and I said, hello, Irene, I hear you're dying of cancer. And she said, how dare you talk like that to me? You know, you don't talk like that to dying people. I said, well, I do. And I said, is there anything I can do for you? And she said, well, you can leave me. She said, my daughter told me about you. And I said, okay. I said, do you want to die? She says, of course I don't want to die. I said, well, if you don't want to die, then stop thinking about dying. Well, the doctor said I was going to die. The doctor said, I'm going to die. It's just the way it is. I'm going to die. I said, that's right. The doctor looked at your body and looked at your attitude and looked at the way you're going, your progress, and he saw you going downhill. And he knew that in a day or two, you're going to be gone. And she said, psh, psh. And I said, yes. Now, are you willing to put a new cause in motion? Are you willing to change that? She said, well, look at me. I'm all shriveled up. I'm about dead. I said, yeah, look at you. I said, I see you whole and perfect. Now, how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself sick? Do you see yourself with a problem? Yeah. Well, stop it. Stop it. So here I am with her after she doesn't really like to have me come in the first place. And I say that you're whole and perfect. She said, well, what do I do? And I said, well, let's call the doctor in here. And let's ask the doctor to say to your family, as your last death wish, that you're whole and perfect. A misdiagnosis that you're really whole and perfect, that you're not dying, that you're not sick. You are not sick. Well, the doctor says, cuckoo, cuckoo, okay, I'll do what you ask. And he called the family in, and he told the family, look, she's not dying, it's a misdiagnosis, and she's doing just fine. She'll be home in no time. And they all jumped for joy. Oh, Grandma, oh, Mama, you know, it's wonderful. Oh, I'm so happy, I'm so happy, I'm so happy. And within a few weeks, she was home. Within a year, or a little more, she was playing tennis. But the thing is, she was back in the game of life. She was back in the game because she said, I don't want to die. I want to live. And when she said, I want to live, she put a cause in motion for herself. Not that I want to live. Living is what I do. How do you say it without being negative about it? Living is what I do. So, she changed her thought about herself. And as she changed her thought about herself, she did that. And she was a very wealthy lady. She had all the money in the world to spend. She owned thousands of acres of the Imperial Valley farmlands down there. And she just was a very wealthy lady. And she's just going to turn it over to her kids, which is okay too. And the kids may not have liked what I did, but actually Grandma did it. She put the cause in motion. She decided to say, well, she did say, well, what if I die and have the doctor say it's a misdiagnosis? What are they going to think of me? I said, who cares? You're not here to care, are you? But you're here. You're here, and that has no effect upon you whatsoever. And she lived a long, beautiful life. Now, we have the opportunity of going along with what the doctor's prognosis and diagnosis is of what's going on in our body. We have the opportunity of going along with what the world says about us. You're short, you're fat, you're tall, you're thin, you're whatever. You're wise, you're dumb. Whatever, it doesn't matter. And the world says that about you, and then you believe it. And so you fulfill what the world says about you. It's as simple as that. You fulfill what the world says about you. Now, do you want death or do you want life? Do you want health or do you want sickness? Do you want abundance or do you want poverty? What image are you projecting from yourself? We've been talking a lot about Obama and how his chin up, shoulders back, chest out, tummy in, butt in. He's a fantastic man. He walks, as Endless would say, with a gait of a confidence that he knows what he's doing. And his charisma is magic. Well, what's he got that you haven't got? He has a dream for himself. He has an imagination for himself. He feels that what he has to offer, before he got elected president, he couldn't do all those things, but he still believed. Before he got elected president, he said, if I'm elected president, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Now, that's a lot of talk. The other candidates, they also said they were going to do things too. But you see, what didn't the other candidates have? The other candidates did not have the charisma, the self-confidence of Obama. He's going to be a magical being for writers for years to come, because he was born out of a simple life. He was born out of difficulties, broken family and everything else like that. Oh, but you got a broken family, you can't do this, you can't do that. Hey! When you like yourself. Does he hate his father? No. Does he hate his mother? No. Does he hate anybody? Not that we know. He doesn't have time for hate. He doesn't have time to feel sorry for himself because he had a broken marriage family and his mommy and daddy were not always together. He doesn't have time to feel that they didn't have a big income. Do you know what he's doing now before he got elected? He had a $2 million house. And he had $40 million in his bank account just from being a lawyer, just from being a very competent being. And he was working on non-payment programs, working with children and things like that that he didn't get paid for, and yet he still had time to define what his role would be if he ran for president. And so when he talked to his party and he said, I want to be president, they said, well, what's your platform? And they said, we got a platform for you. And he said, no, I have a platform. Here's my platform. Well, can you fit these things in? Not necessarily, but This is my platform. Do you like my platform? Do you like me for who I am? Or must I be who you are? I mean, he's a cool cat. And so they realized that they had a winner on their hands. And they didn't want the other party to get in. And so they backed him. And what he had to offer was great. You see, he did not buy into being ruled by the people who were supporting him. He had the largest small donation contribution to his presidential fund, the largest presidential fund, and the largest small donation to the presidential fund that any president ever had in the history. He had like $40 million in small contributions, in just small amounts of money, from $10 here, $10 there. Amazing. Now, what did he do? He believes in himself. And when you believe in yourself, when your virtues and your values stand behind you so perfectly that you say to yourself, wow, wow, this is what I believe, this is what I... And you know another thing? Endless. You know another thing? His wife is supporting him all the way. And he's got a good-looking wife, doesn't he? Sharp girl. And his two daughters, what are they doing? Obama, Obama. And he said, Daddy, Daddy, you know? And what's one of the first things he said he was going to do when he moved in the White House? He's going to buy a dog for his girls. Crazy. But you see, this is, and he has time to think what you would say are frivolous thoughts. Well, these are family thoughts. He believes in his family. He loves his family. He supports his family. And he does everything that is good for his family. He moved to Washington earlier on than the presidential program because he wanted his girls to be in the school that they would be in when he was elected president. What confidence! My goodness sakes! What a magic man! But he merely believed in himself. The devil came to Jesus and said, Jesus, if you let me, you know, do these things, I will make it so you can jump off this wall and not be hurt, and I will have all the people in the world adore and worship you. And he says, no, thank you. I've already got that. Anything you can do for me, I'm already there. I've already got it. And you see, when you believe this about yourself, when you believe this about who you are, then you can do it. You know, I don't think of me as white, and I don't think of you as black. I don't think of color whatsoever. But you might. And if you do, you're silly. Because Obama just proved it, that there is no color. There is no color. For the majority of the people of the United States are a mixed race. Not black, but mixed race, with a lot of Mexicans and Germans and Italians and everything else on the sun. And they all, majority, he got an over majority vote on electing him. People's choice. Now, you can be the people's choice. When you start liking yourself, when you start believing that you are competent and confident to do anything you want to do, then you'll just go out and do it. Now, do you think Obama may make a mistake now and then? Come.
No.
Sure. He's a human being, and he's doing his best, and he may make a mistake now and then. But the majority of the things that he's going to do are not going to be mistakes. The majority of the things that he's going to do are things that he has thought through very, very seriously. A mistake might be choosing a person to have a position on his cabinet when that person really isn't able to do it. You know? That could be a mistake. And then he could take that person into his office and say, look, they think I made a mistake with you, that you can't really do it. Let's talk about it. Can you really do it? Can you carry these things out? Can you muster this here? I believe in you. Now, do you believe in yourself? Can you believe in this? Yep. Okay. I stand behind you. You understand? Now, what do you think that man is going to do, or that woman, whoever it was that he selected for the position that they didn't feel she was competent? What is he going to do? They're going to say, Obama, the greatest. He believes in me. So I'm going to believe in myself. He believes in me, even when the legislators and everybody said, no, I'm not qualified. But he knew something about me. He knew that there was some little dreamingness about me, that when I get busy on it, magic takes place in my world. And that's the thing that takes place in your world. Magic takes place in your world whenever you really let go of all that's in the outer and you get your values going from what's on the inner. Are you a good person? Of course you are. Are you a healthy person? Of course you are. Are you a happy person? Of course you are. Are you a wealthy person? Of course you are. Are you surrounded by happy and wonderful friends? Of course you are. Is everything in your world going roses? Yes. Are you supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Yes. You like yourself above all things because you are
number one.
That's right. You're God. You're number one. You're God. You like yourself because you're God. You are God. You're number one. You are the only and the all. Now, do you think that God can make any mistakes?
No.
No. And if you keep thinking that you're God and that you're acting like God and doing everything like God, you're going to produce like God. Now, how does God produce? Good and very good. And that's wonderful, yeah? So, where do you stand now? Where do you stand? Oh, poor little me. If I'd been in America and I was running for the office and I was like Obama, he'd win over me. That's right, he would. He'd win over you because Obama didn't think he was winning over anybody. Obama went into that race and he said, I am the president. I'm not the next president. I am the president. I am the president now, then, always, forever. You understand? I'm not going to be the president. I am the next president. No, I am president. Can you visualize that? Isn't that a very small nuance of an idea? But it is so significant, so powerful. I am the president. You know, in high school, we had boys and girls. And the boys and girls knew each other. And the girls would sit there and look at the boys. Oh, isn't he wonderful? Isn't he wonderful? And then they would take their paper and they'd write down their name. And their name would be Sybil. And Sybil. And then she'd look at the boy and the boy was Agabua. And she'd look at Sam Agabua. And she'd say, Mrs. Sam Agabua. Sybil Agabua. Mrs. Sybil Agabua. Mrs. Sam Agabua. That sounds so nice. That sounds so... And what happened? They may have never told him that she was doing this. Nobody else told her. She was writing this in her own book, you know. But she was planting seeds in her heart of the person she wanted in her life. And he came along. Now, she may not have known it at that time. It may have been a little later in her life. But what she was doing at any point in her life, when she saw Sam, she said, I am Mrs. Agabua. And she said that to herself, and she said that with meaning, and she experienced it. Now, why did she do that? Because she's putting a cause in motion. Was it a good cause? Sure, yeah. It's a good cause. Now, is it a cause that's bringing her results? You bet. Is she happy? You bet. Now, does she ever want her Sam to have problems? No. So she does not say Sam ever has any problems. Does she want Sam ever to be sick? No. So she never says Sam is sick. Does she want Sam to be well? Well, he is well. He is wealthy. He is fantastic. He is glorious. He is... Never for a second does she say, you're not the president. Never for a second does Obama say, I want to be. I am. I am. Now, Endless has been going around wanting to do things for other people, wanting to take care of children, wanting to take care of all these special little projects that are going around here that need somebody to guide them. Well, Endless also wants to run his business, and he wants his business to be a success. Well, he's got these two things working at him cross purpose. Endless can love the children all he wants. But what he does, he sees people working with those children who can afford to give the money they need to provide them with what they desire, okay? You don't, your little penny, your little pittance that you give is nothing compared to what other sources can do. You, all you have to do is write to, what's the name, Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton, he's got programs going in Africa of helping groups of people accomplish things. Just write and send. Everybody's writing to him. But are you everybody? Hey, are you everybody?
No.
Huh?
Yes.
No, you're you. I am me. You're not everybody. And all of these everybody's that are writing to him, their letters will fall by the side and your letter will jump right out of the pile. And he will see it and he'll say, this has merit. This has merit. We'll take care of that. And now we need publicity, we need graphic design, we need all of these things for that. And let's see, I see he's a graphic designer and he's in publicity, so I'll have him do the work. So you get a job doing the thing that you want to do, supporting the thing you want to do, and someone else is paying the bill. Doesn't that sound interesting? Doesn't that sound interesting? I can't really hear you.
Yes.
I can't hear you.
Yes.
Ah, good. Yes. Now, all of you, I'm talking very serious. If you don't get your message across by your own confidence, you're never going to be an Obama. If you don't walk straight like an arrow, if you don't walk self-confident, if you don't speak clearly and soundly on what, you don't have to shout. You'll never hear Obama shout. Never. He speaks with confidence. Now, you, speak with confidence for whatever your dream is. Speak your word and say, I am whole and perfect. I like me. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Yay, yay, yay! You know, I'm wonderful. I'm a happy guy. Bill Clinton is interested in my projects, and or maybe somebody else. Actually, Bill Gates is doing those same type of things, you know. But who knows who's going to do it. But the money is there. Money is there. You're not after helping the kids. You're after getting the funds for the projects so the kids can have the things that they would you like to have them have, right? Now, do you need credit for this? Do you need people to recognize that you're the one who went out there and did it? No. That's good. I was wondering how soon that was going to come. No. You don't need any credit. And if you don't need any credit, what's going to happen? Your project is going to be a fabulous success, and you'll have more credit and you know what to do with. For when you give totally of yourself without expecting anything in return, your project gets done beautifully and you are very well blessed. And that's very nice. Now, what is it? It's up to you. How you're doing it is up to you. And where you want to go, it's up to you. You make that decision, and when you make that decision, wonderful things happen to you. Right? Right. Okay, anybody with any questions? Or any thoughts? Yes, Mabel? You're bursting with talk? No? Okay, anybody else? Yes? You had a question? No? And if you can't speak loudly, I don't want to hear it. But what's your question?
I want to speak
louder. What's that?
I want to give us. You are talking about consciousness, and I want you to. Are you listening?
You want what?
I said we're talking about consciousness.
We're talking about consciousness. That's what you're talking about right now. Good.
Yes.
Okay.
I want you to tell us the process involved in developing consciousness.
Now, Peter?
Yes?
Define what she has just said. Go ahead, define what she has just said.
Put more light on development of consciousness. How are we to develop consciousness?
I love you. I love you. Okay. Put more.
Okay.
Correct?
Consciousness is an awareness. If you are aware of what you are doing, you are conscious of what you are doing. That's the first stage. You must know what you are going to do first. Articulate it when you are saying it, so that people can understand you, and you understand yourself. These are the methods.
Beautiful. Did you explain it to her fully? Did she understand what you said?
So do you understand what I said?
Did you understand what he said?
I understand what consciousness means by your explanation. You put on the president. More than today, how do we go about developing and being focused? We're talking about articulates. Being articulate and being focused about our consciousness.
And where does it start? Where does it start?
Why I'm asking this question is because
it starts in you. It starts in your thought.
Now,
how do you have consciousness?
I know that, you know, in the process, because of the individual consciousness we have before, you know, we have to alter it for us to flow in the direction he's talking about. So, you know, the alteration of this of the way we think and feel before, and building up, we go about building up and retaining and being in it, living and basking in that new developed consciousness.
All right, Peter, encapsulate what she said.
As for me, you don't remove anything in yourself. You don't remove anything, whether it is bad or good. Of course, we have no bad or good. You have to put new cause in motion and allow that cause to begin to develop.
Make new choices.
Then you, yourself, you focus. You have a one-pointed attitude of knowing that thing. If you want to achieve that end, you just point your mind there. Do not allow anything to distract you at all. That's how to go about consciousness.
He defined it very well. He defined it very well. But what he was saying was that when you are facing a problem, if you give your attention to the problem grows. If you give your attention to the solution is done. And it's hard to take your attention away from the problem to the solution. Well, you don't take your attention away from the problem to the solution. You just put your attention on the solution. If you're going to think of the problem at all, you empower the problem. Now, you were going to say?
Boy,
I'd hate to be in your class.
I have to recognize who I am. Who am I?
Who are you?
Yes. If I'm talking about consciousness, I'll have to recognize who I am, what I am. If I recognize what I am, then I will realize that my thinking determines my experience.
Yeah.
When I know that my thinking determines my experience, then I'm about to show what I let into my consciousness.
Look, consciousness is awareness.
Yes.
Okay? When we are aware, we are conscious.
Yes.
When we are unaware, we are unconscious. Now, what you are conscious of, what you are aware of, is that which is beneficial to you and helpful or not. Because to be aware, you can be aware that the fire is burning down the forest, or you can be aware that it's burning in the fireplace and giving heat to the room and very pleasant. You're sitting around having a lovely evening. Or you can have it be a thousand possibilities. Now, consciousness is a fact and it exists. Awareness is what we are thinking about the consciousness, how we are applying the consciousness, how we are aware of the consciousness in our life. Whether we are aware of the consciousness in our life as a blessing or a curse. And if you have everything in your life as a blessing, then there will be no curses. As Jesus said to the devil, he says, I already can do everything you want to offer me. What's the big deal? So you say to anything that wants to deny you who you are, you say, hey, I already know the truth. And the truth sets me free. I already know where I am and where I'm going. I already know I'm good. I already know I'm God. I'm the creator of my world. Now, consciousness and awareness and ego and all of these different terms that come out of the psychology books are all very interesting, but the way we use consciousness and the way we use ego and so forth is just a little bit different. I use ego as that aspect of your being which inspires you to do all sorts of wonderful things. Other people use ego as the attitude that you have inside yourself that puts you of a superior nature to somebody else, or as you controlling other people in your world and manipulating them. Well, now that's not the way that I use it. No. You're asking about consciousness, and we are talking about consciousness quite frequently here this week. And consciousness is when we are alert, awake to something. If I hit you on the head with a hammer, boing, you go to sleep. You're unconscious. If I give you an anesthesia, you're unconscious. And you're unaware. If I hypnotize you, you're unconscious. But now that doesn't mean that you're dead. That doesn't mean that your world doesn't continue going on. Whatever causes you put in motion are going right on when you're asleep, when you're unconscious of it. And so we want to be very careful that all the causes we put in motion are ones that we would like our mommy and daddy to know about, that we would like to continue while we're sleeping, you know? Now, what do they say to little children when they go to sleep? Say your prayer. Now I lay me down to sleep, you know? If I should die before I wake, why think about dying, you know? I bless the Lord, my soul to take. So, you see, all of these things. And then, rock my baby in the treetop when the bough breaks, you know? But these are things that we have in our consciousness. And if those are our awareness, then that's going to work itself out in our life. And we will have those things. Do you have a child? And I'm not asking this specifically, I'm saying generally. Do you have a child? Is that child in your family? Do you love that child? Doesn't matter whether it's 1 year or 2 years. Do you love that child? Do you think, oh dear, that child has a cold. Oh dear, that child has bad genes from us and it's going to have all these terrible things. If you do that, you're killing the child right away. People kill their children left and right by having negative thoughts about them. And they don't realize that they're the fault. They don't realize that instead of saying, my child is whole and perfect, my child lives in its ideal spirit, mind, and body, my child is fabulous! Fabulous! And so when a child dies, then they say, oh, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? Well, you know what you did wrong. You didn't see the child alive. You didn't see the child living a dynamic, vital life. You just said, oh, well, just another kid. You know, many families have just another kid. And the other kid that they have, they're not really saying, you're wonderful. I told you about Doris in the preemie hospital where the premature babies are born. Doris would go in there. Her shift was evening. And she'd pick up the preemies as they'd come to her, and she'd hold them in her arms, little tiny things, sometimes no bigger than her full hand. And she'd say, welcome to the world. You're wonderful. You're fantastic. You're coming to a beautiful world, a world filled with joy and peace and harmony. Oh, you're so fortunate. It's so nice to welcome you in the world. You are so beautiful. And the kids start smiling, you know, before it's even able to open its eyes and stuff. But it has that feeling of joy inside of it. It's welcomed. Now, how many of us have been welcomed like that by our parents? Or how many of us as parents welcome our children and say, welcome! You know, pick up the baby for the first time when it's born and say, wow, what a great kid you are! And he's got different color hair than yours, you know. You say, wow, how about that, you know? We got new strains coming out. And so he's doing all sorts of things that you say, I love you, I love you, I love you. Then he pisses in your face, you know. You say, I love you anyhow, you know. Because, you know, he wasn't doing something to be mean. It's just nature's way of being. He was just being. And you love him. And you don't forgive him. Because there's nothing to forgive him for. What he did was just a natural thing that he did. So, we want to love. Every single child comes into our world. And, you know, it's not too late to begin right now to put your consciousness where you want it. To put your awareness where you want it. You have a child? You have a child. Is your child supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Yes. Don't be so. Yes. Say yes.
Yes.
Do you love the kid?
Yes.
Yes. I love the kid. My goodness sake. He doesn't stand a chance. You better give him to me. I'll take him home. But, you know, you want to empower that kid with all of your love and all of your expectations and all your, regardless of what he does right or wrong, you want to empower him to be all that he can be. Because that's who he really is. Now, what did you do for me today here? Last night, all of you went around here putting balloons up and decorating the place for my birthday. Now, isn't that nice of you? Now, I think I'm very blessed. I am very blessed. I mean, I'm, everywhere I go, people do nice things at right times, but this is very special. Very special. And I'm so honored. And am I like the preemie baby? Welcome to the world! Welcome to the world! Welcome to our world, you're saying to me. And I say, thank you. Now, do you have a great kid? Do you have a wonderful child?
Yes.
Maybe you didn't understand me before. Yes. Yes is the right answer. Do you have wonderful children?
Yes. Yes.
How many do you have?
12.
12?
Oh, yes.
You have 12?
12 children.
And your name is Jesus, huh?
Yeah.
And your name is Jesus. your 12 disciples. Beautiful. Now, did you encourage each one when they came on board to say, you're wonderful, you've come to the right family, we love you, we love you? Did you say that? Yes, you did.
Yes.
Maybe not out loud or just that way, but you said it. Now, how many kids you got? Albert, how many children do you have?
9. 10?
Oh, nine. Slowpoke, huh? 9. Well, that's wonderful. Are they all super kids? Yes.
Yes.
Or 2 kids?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, that's better. And are they all brilliant geniuses?
Yes.
Yes, there you go. And are they all beautiful and handsome?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Do they all look like their dad and mom? Do they look like you? Are they as handsome and beautiful as you and your wife?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. You got kids?
One of them is here talking.
That's all right. That's all right. Wherever they are, we bless them, and they're always ours. Always. Whether they're living with us, or whether they're not living with us, whether they're dead or alive, or not yet born in the oven yet, you know, it all depends. We love them. Right? Right? Yes?
We talked about solution.
We're talking about what?
Solution.
Consciousness?
Solutions. Yes.
Okay.
And his solution is thinking of a solution, not recognizing a problem. Like Unity says, when they have problem, that we let God and let go. But you are telling us that when there is problem, we think of a solution. The solution, not an effect of our problem, and the solution, not recognizing that there is problem. That recognizing that there is problem, then you go and think of the solution.
That's an approach. Now, yes, you said something?
Can I make a contribution?
You said loud?
As I want to make a contribution to that question.
You want to answer the question. All of you speaking at the same time, I didn't get any of it. But now, she's speaking about solutions, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I want to make a contribution to what he has asked.
Oh, I see. It's best to leave that alone until we get done with him. Because you may be surprised what comes out of it. Now, okay over here is indicating to us that he is a deep thinker, and he's considering this from all aspects and all angles, and that's good, except for one thing. We don't let go and let God necessarily unless we know who God is. Now, okay, I'm not asking this unkindly, but are you God?
Yes.
Do you think I would let go and let you run my life?
No.
That's right. I, as God, let go and let the God in me run my life. You, as God, let go and let the God in you run your life. And as we are aware of the universal allness, that's even better. But the thing is, if we say, I let go and let God, you know, I don't really care, no problem, and I don't have any responsibility here at all, what happens?
Nothing.
Nothing happens. It's just a total failure. Now, why is it a failure? It's a failure because we haven't taken control. Okay? Are you God?
Yes.
Why are you going to let go and let God? What you're going to do is say, okay, I'm God, now this is my decision. Right? I'm God, this is my choice. I'm God, this is my solution. Now, it sounds kind of tough to say it that way, but that's what it is. You're God, totally in charge of your world, totally in charge of everything you do, totally in charge of all experiences that come your way. Every child that lives or dies in your existence, in your personal family, or in the family of your own children and their own families and so forth, and your grandparents and your brothers and sisters, and you know the whole gambit of your particular part of the street. Are they all living now? You're shaking your head yes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the tape recorder can't see that shake head. So you're shaking your head yes. Now, so you're saying everyone lives eternally.
Yes.
So they're all alive right now.
Yes.
Okay, now, are you communicating with them in any way?
Yes.
Not necessarily. You are aware of them, but why should they be interested in you? Why should they be interested in what you're doing when they might be having so many interesting things to do themselves? You know? And are they living on what we call another dimension? Yes. They're living on another dimension of the allness. The allness has many dimensions.
Yes.
And they're living on another dimension of the allness. Now, do you know what your great-grandmother is doing right now? Do you know that your father and mother want you to do these things? Do you know that your kids want you to do these things? Now, all time is now and all space is here and now. Do you know that your unborn children are having families of their own and having lives of their own, and you are not even paying attention to them?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you see, this is what we do to ourselves when we get ourselves bound up in having something outside of us handle what we should be handling from within. We're handling from within, I am God. I am the ideal. I am my original purity and integrity. I am the all. I like me. I like my world. I like the people in my world. All of you. I just absolutely love you. I feel so good about you. I can say things to you sometimes I shouldn't. But that's not good or bad. I love you. I love you absolutely, and I say things to you that my heart says to say, and I say it because I love you, not because I want to change you. I just want you to know what my point of view is on what you're thinking, and then you do whatever you want to do. Now, that's great, isn't it? Right?
I am God, and I have no problem as to think of solutions. Now, that was what I was
Shush up. I am God, and I am filled with solutions. You see, I don't have problems. You give the don't have problems a negative power to be. I didn't even know there was a word problems. Now you made me know there's a word problems. And so now what am I going to put in the word problems? I'm going to put in things I don't want, you know. Now, I don't even know the word problems. That's not in my vocabulary. I only know solutions. And I only know peace and harmony and goodness and joy and abundance and all that good stuff. No. Do I know healing? No. Healing is an act of happening. Wholeness is an act of being. And we are whole, all of us, every one of us. And if we have a healing going on within us, it's because we happen to let our thought slip off the track for a moment. And all we have to do is get our thought right back on the track. I'm whole and perfect. Boom, bada, boom. And that's what it is. But you do it with all your heart and all your soul and all your being so that, wow, everything is beautiful. Can you see that? Everything is beautiful. And so whatever you do, you're the creator of your world. Well, we could go to the rest of you, see about your children. How many children? Yeah. Yes?
13.
13?
Yes. 13.
1-3.
Yes.
1-3.
Yes.
Yeah. Slow folk, huh? Okay. cheaper by the dozen, you know. Okay. You have 13. And are they all fabulous?
Oh, beautiful.
Right. Have you, did any of them leave before they finished their maturity with you? Did any of them die?
No.
That's great. Keep it up that way. Make your home so attractive to your children that they don't want to leave. And even if they were to pretend to leave for a minute, you say, no, this is your home. What do you want us to do? What else do you want us to add to your home? Come on, stay here. And they'll stay. Because they don't know. All they know is somebody said something at a point in consciousness, and they took it to mean something that they were no longer needed. You know? Because they came here to live a life of 1 minute, 1 hour, you know, a year, 100 years. They came to live whatever, and they can... This is the point. They can change their mind any place along the way. You go and pray for your baby that might be dying, and you say, oh, please don't die. Well, you are not very nice. You look at your baby and you say, wow, you're whole and perfect. You're fantastic. Oh, I love you so. Oh, everybody loves you so. The whole family just thinks you're the greatest. And you're bubbling over. What's going to happen? Do you think that vibration is going to get through to that youngster? You think so? You bet. Now, you do that with others too. Where anyone else in your world brings that to your attention and they're working with someone who's having a problem, get in there and bubble. Get in there and Obama. Yeah. How many kids have you got? You just got married. Well, how many kids do you have?
None.
Well, you have kids, really. You have your brothers and sisters, your mother that you're taking care of, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that neat? Yeah. But so they're not his birth children. They are his children of choice. And when he gets married, as he is now married, and he has his own new family, he will make those children of choice out on their own, responsible to themselves, right? Are they all good people, the people in your family?
Yes.
That's fantastic. And how many kids do you have, Lucky?
I have a child.
One child? I had one child, too. And how old is your child?
She's
6. 6? That's a good start. Okay. You got 6,000 years to go. Enjoy his company, or more or less. You know, that's great. Are you happy?
Yes, but I'm not
sure. Yeah. No? Just remember, share with your children what you learned here.
Share with your children what you learned.
Right. Now, okay, you have 12 wives and 300 children, huh? That could keep you busy. Now, you have 2 wives, right?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
And how many children?
12.
12 children? Oh, another one. So you're...
Yeah, he said 12.
you're Jesus too, huh?
I can't remember.
Now, are all your children magic children?
Yes.
Are they all geniuses?
Yes.
Are they all immortal?
Yes.
Eternal?
Yes.
Fantastic?
Fantastic.
Are they a reflection of their mothers or their fathers?
Fathers.
African
master. Beautiful. Well, all right. How many children do you have? Yes. Mabel? Huh? Mabel? How many children do you have? I don't hear.
5?
I only heard about 3 of them.
Sorry?
I only heard about 3 of them.
No, it's 5.
5?
Yes.
Are they all supercalifragilistic?
They're wonderful.
Oh, they're wonderful. See, she's got to use her own language. She can't say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Can you imagine if she said that to her class would say, oh, you know that too? Wonderful. You're a very poppin' girl, you know. Okay, now, you have 5 children. And
yes.
What are their ages?
Ages.
What?
Ages. They range from ages to infinity.
Oh!
They range from what?
From ages to infinity.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you know about that, Sam? Did you know they range from infinity? My God. Now, I'm happy with all of you. But when I ask you a question, I don't want you to play games with me. I just want you to give me the answer. It's so much easier for me to be super loving with you and share the feeling that I have for you of love and the feeling I have for you of positive thinking and blessing to your children. But if you're going to play games with me and not tell me their ages specifically and not tell me their details specifically. Now, what did you say? How many children did you have?
Myself.
You said?
12.
How clear. How clear. And what are their ages?
The highest and the
Can you remember them?
From ageless to eternity.
Oh, we have another one like that.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, is that good? Is that good?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about you? Do you have any children, Mrs.
Me?
Bill?
I have three.
Three?
Yes.
You have three who?
Genies.
Three geniuses. Okay. Now, are these geniuses expressing magnificence in everything they do?
Yes.
And are you proud of them beyond measure?
Yes.
And is Sam proud of them beyond measure? Yes. Every one of them. Every one of them. That's beautiful. Now, I didn't get your name.
Etoba.
Etoba. Yeah, okay. Etoba?
Yes.
Etoba.
Huh?
Etoba.
I met you before, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah, last time you were here, you were writing for your magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Now, how many kids have you got?
I've got four.
Four?
Yes.
My goodness. You one and you four and 12 and 12 and 11 and
nine.
Yes.
Yeah. Terrific. And one and me one and you five and you three. That's good. Okay. Ethelbert, right? Okay. Now, how are your kids? What kind of kids are they? Are they beautiful, glorious, fantastic? And are you beautiful, glorious, and fantastic? Are you beautiful, glorious, and fantastic?
I am a beautiful parent.
Beautiful. Now, did you hear what he said? He said he is a beautiful parent. Now, do you know what a parent is? A parent is a farmer. And a parent nurtures the children as they are growing in the garden of the family to be the finest children they can possibly be. The parent makes sure they have only the purest of everything, the purest of thought, the purest of food, the purest of water, the purest of everything. And how does a parent do that? A parent says, I bless this food. What do they say?
This food is healthy for my body and filled with love.
This food is healthy for my body and filled with love. Does that purify the food? Do we need any other outside purification for the food?
No.
That's it. Now, are your children all receiving perfect, pure food?
Yes.
Yes. And do you think that each one of your children is more magnificent than the other? Just absolutely fantastic. They keep you on your feet, on your toes, as they're doing beautiful things?
They're uniquely magnificent. Each one is uniquely magnificent.
Each one is uniquely magnificent. Yeah. Why is it that I could understand what he just said? He articulated his words clearly and precisely, and I could understand. He spoke not the king's English or the queen's English. He spoke his English. And his English is the broadcaster English. His English is the newscaster English. His English is the English that needs to get across to the movies. He's like the international English speaker, where he can be understood in every country in the world wherever English is understood.
I am understood.
And that's pretty good. You want to be that too? Or you are that?
Being understood by everybody.
Well, if you are that, yet all times you articulate your words and you speak loudly and clearly. Now, Seville does this. She speaks loudly and clearly and articulates, and I always understand her. And it's really an honor to hear her talk, and it's an honor to hear many of you talk. But now, Peter was like a broken record there for a while, and we finally got him fixed. Now, he speaks articulately, beautifully, strongly. He speaks for you and other people who don't speak so strongly. Now, I tell you, you're doing this for me so that I can hear you. And I say, no, not really. You're doing this for Obama. You're doing this for Obama. You're doing this for Obama. You're doing this for Obama so he can hear. Or are you? You're doing this because you're learning from what he has done, how he has put miracles into practice and brought them forth in such a glorious way that people thought, surely it could never be done. Martin Luther King went out and protested. Yeah, sure, he paved the way, but he protested and he got himself shot. Yes. Do you think Obama's going to get himself shot?
No.
He's a lover. He's going out with solutions for the world as well as the United States. Now, are you going out with solutions for the world as well as your Nigerian community here?
Yes.
And if you are, that's great. But if you're not, it shows. And you know why it shows? It shows because you're selfish. And you brought it up the other day. It shows because you are judgmental. Whenever you judge anybody or anything, you get a kick in the tail. When you go around judging anything that anybody does or anything that anybody says, nobody's going to like you. If you go around and say, hey, I didn't understand that. Did you say that white is black and black is white? No, I said white is white and black is black. Well, I heard you say white is black and black is white. No, if I said that, I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but no, I said white is white and black is black. Oh, great. Now, I was stupid. I questioned that person, and I questioned their statement whether they really meant what they meant, and they didn't. They misspoke somehow, or I misheard. And as long as they misspoke or I misheard, as long as we were not having a awareness of each other, we had no communication. Good. He said, black is white, and white is black. Can you think of anything? Stupid. Well, he didn't say that. It's what I heard. And so sometimes you persist in sharing with people, and you say, hey, did you just say white is black and black is white? No, why? I heard you say white is black and black is white. No. Interesting idea. You know, a name is a name. We give a name to anything. We could call a chair a house. We could call a house a forest. We could call a father a Piccadilly, you know. We could call a mother a fairy dancer. You know, we could call anything. Any names we want. Whatever names we give to things, that's the names they live in. So, we say black is black and white is white. And, oh, golly, am I glad that I pursued that with you. Because I was thinking you had a different point of view than I did. Not you're stupid, but you had a different point of view than I did. And we still have the same point of view. I just didn't hear clearly what you said. Now, isn't that a lot better than arguing with people? Than getting angry at people? And telling people that they should believe what you believe and that they should follow what you want to tell them. Isn't that silly? It's so silly, isn't it? But we do that, don't we? We do that because we didn't understand. Now, I asked you to tell me what your participants here were having, how each one of you were talking, and I didn't quite hear you, because I wanted to answer your question. And I cannot answer your question if I think black is white and white is black. I get the wrong impression there. But if I fully understand what you're saying, then I can work with you very beautifully. Now, I could be a normal human being, and you wouldn't like it. I could be a normal human being and allow you to talk so I can't understand you and just not pay any attention to you. And just talk about how I want to talk. A lot of speakers do that. They have audiences that do not speak articulately and clearly, and they don't understand what the audience says, and so they just go off on their tangent. Now, is that what you want people in your world to do? If not, be articulate at all times. Be definite. Don't say a lot, but say it true. Say what you mean articulately, carefully, and perfectly, so that everybody understands exactly what you say. And if you can see by the twinkle in somebody's eye that he mistook what you said, stop yourself right there and say, I think I gave you the wrong impression. I think you got the wrong impression. And let's think that through once again. And they will admire you. They'll respect you because they believe in truth that you think that everything you say deserves to be heard, deserves to be understood, and deserves to be followed. Deserves to be heard, deserves to be understood, and deserves to be followed. Now, isn't that true? Is what you say, does what you say, are the things you say, do they deserve to be heard? Are they deserve to be followed? Are they deserved to be listened to? Well, if they are, then say it articulately and carefully. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, any other questions that we have? Yeah. Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Excuse me, we have another program now.
You have what?
We have another program now.
I thought it was tomorrow at 10:30. It's now?
10:30, yeah.
Okay. Write your question down, and we'll take it up this afternoon, and be happy to. The boss speaks, and we all listen. And so, what we're going to do now, we're going to have a graduation ceremony for two of our University of Healing graduates. And Sybil will set up the stage, and we will gather them together, and be together with them, and pronounce what their graduation as receiving their Bachelor of Metaphysics degree, right? You each got your Bachelor of Metaphysics degree. Now, some of you have your Bachelor, your Master of Metaphysics, and your Doctor of Metaphysics, and some have your, so even a Doctor of Philosophy, some of you earlier students had that. Now, what does it make the difference? I'll dwell on that for a minute. What does it make the difference with what degrees you have? The only thing that makes the difference is how you practice what you have learned. If Mabel is a school teacher and she goes to school and tries to out-talk her children, she will be very sadly put out. But if Mabel goes to school and says to her children, "Children, I have something wonderful to share with you today." And they all sit back and say, "Well, it's about time." And so then she shares with them these things. And then after she's done telling them these wonderful stories, they say, "Tell us some more." I'll tell you some more tomorrow. But you turn your lessons in and get everything all done, and I'll tell you more tomorrow. I'll tell you about the little boy who was a prince who wanted to learn how to know the world, and he wanted to know what's going on all over the world. So he gave himself a new perspective and a new understanding. I'll tell you the story about the princess who lost her hat. And as she lost her hat, she didn't know what she was going to do, because the hat was the symbol of her authority, her crown. And she knew that her mother would be unhappy with her. But she lost her hat. And you know what it did? It blew off of the world. Now, do you know how she went about getting it? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, wouldn't those be delightful stories? I've just made them up for you right now. But wouldn't they be delightful stories? And every single moment, every day, she could give her children two or three stories like that. And they would come to class. "You got any stories today? Any stories today?" And we sit quietly in our places, and if you listen, give me your full attention so I can share with you all of the wonderful talents that I've learned and how to teach. And I'll tell you these stories because I love you, just like I have my Mr. Candle tapes. So, interesting, huh? How about that, Miss Sybil?
Beautiful.
You're wonderful. I love you. So much for our lesson. Here we go on our graduation. Okay.